This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
Happy New Year, everyone. From the Tracon Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. I'm Jeremy Scott, alongside driver analyst Charlie Ante. I'll say this, Charlie. I think I gambled and lost because I thought, you know what? Those 2 weeks during the holidays, nobody's going to have any news. Oh, was I wrong?
I think the first thing broke like maybe 10 minutes after we finished recording it.
Yeah, I think it did. And I'm just like, I saw that and I'm like, we'll see what happens. You know, and then everything else started breaking and breaking and breaking. And I'm just like, oh, this is my life now. So nonetheless, we've got a very packed show for you today. Over the past couple of days, I fielded some phone calls and there's some misunderstanding going on with the in regards to Formula Atlantics, Pro Formula Atlantics. So Matt Miller and Myrtle Swan will both be joining us to talk a little bit about that. And then Charlie had an idea. I followed through on it. Now we've got some sort of partnership. We'll tell you more about that a little bit later on in the show. But if you want to leave us a voicemail, 815-714-9260 is our number. InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com. Add InsideOpenWheel on Twitter and InsideOpenWheel on Facebook. And we've got a new logo. Woohoo! I'm excited. This is a really nice logo. So if you see it, it's obviously an orange-looking champ car, which is good. So we do have some developing news coming out of the world of IndyCar, and this came out the other day as a rumor that the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg was possibly going to be rescheduled. I contacted IndyCar, the city of St. Petersburg, and Green Savory. Green Savory got back to me, I think it was this morning, or no, yesterday morning, saying there, you know, nothing to see, you know, nothing here yet, we'll let you know. Then the morning before we scheduled, IndyCar released a press release saying this. IndyCar officials have announced the 2021 Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg is being rescheduled for Sunday, April 25th due to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. And indeed, the move creates a condensed, action-packed early season schedule for 2021. Now, I take a look at my handy-dandy open wheel calendar for the three series that we cover, and it leaves a dilemma. I've been hearing rumblings that there's at least one or two teams and maybe a couple of drivers that were considering contesting both in IndyCar and the Road to Indy and with the United States FIA series. Unfortunately, this is going to create a huge roadblock for that because St. Petersburg has now been moved to the same weekend as Sonoma for F4 and FRA. I thought that there was a conflict with Long Beach, but then again, I remembered, oh, wait, none of the Road to Indy race at Long Beach. So there's only one conflict that this runs into. Charlie, it's interesting now that, you know, we had an opportunity for drivers to compete in more races, get better skill. Now that's thrown a wrench into things, but at the same time, it may not throw a wrench into things because California is essentially shut down right now.
I mean, we've been saying since last spring that everything is tentative, right? Everything is subject to change. And I think, you know, things are a little bit more concrete than they would have been, 8-10 months ago, but it's still, everything is subject to change. So, that aspect hasn't really changed too much. But I think with this conflict, I mean, there's only one conflict, so it's not really that bad. But I wonder if any of these championships have any sort of, permissible drop races so that maybe if you miss one, you can drop your worst result, or if you miss a race, you can drop that race.
Well, here's the interesting thing. To answer your question, no, they do not. But remember that FRA has that association with Honda, and they have the association to where the champion, at least last year, goes over and gets an Indy Lights ride. By the way, we still don't know where Linus Lundqvist is going to be next year. I haven't heard any rumors, but I have a feeling what's going to happen. Here's the problem. The Sonoma and Laguna Seca races for F4 and FRA are tied into SVRA. I've got to get a hold of my contacts at SVRA and see. I doubt they're going to move it, but I'll see if there's any chance that there's probably going to be some sort of movement with that. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Like I said, there's at least one team that I know that is going to announce in the next couple of days their intentions to add some cars into the road to Indy, and maybe one or two drivers might be joining as well. So it's going to be really interesting. I've heard who's going to be there, and I think it's a great idea. Go ahead.
And you know, now that I'm looking at the schedule, I see that so the FRA and F4 have back to back weekends at Sonoma and then Laguna Seca.
Correct.
That reminds me of not this past season, but the one before, in the F1600 series and FRP series, we had a back to back weekend, and everybody absolutely hated it. Even Bob Wright, the series owner, was like, "Yeah, we're never going to do that again." So
I can hear Bob saying that.
It may be different for pro teams, but it's gonna be a tough 7 or 8 days for them.
I can say there are a lot of unhappy people when the schedule came out in the F4 FRA paddock, but it's there now, so we'll see what happens. Like I said, those two dates are tied to SVRA, so it's not like they're gonna be. It's not like they're going to be, they can move that around. So, to be continued, as I like to say. We're going to talk about a sad story that was also released today. A longtime Carton IndyCar owner, Pat Patrick, passed away Tuesday at the age of 91. And I'm sorry, he does not get enough credit for the ownership that he had. Yes, he helped fund the early days of Kart, but he also brought back Firestone. So now we have this relationship with Firestone that's second to none. He brought in he was like Dale Coyne, where he brought in young drivers. You know, look at how long Scott Pruitt was with Pat Patrick. Tom Bagley used to drive for Pat Patrick. Tom Bagley, as you know, was a former open wheel racer, and that's how I've heard about Pat Patrick and how he's a tough owner, but he expects a lot out of you. So condolences to the Patrick family on the passing of, I think, one of the greatest owners of the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I don't know if I have much to add to that.
Also, let's get to some good news. So last month, Rob Howden teased me that, hey, I've got some news coming out. Can we wait? About doing the Road to Indy wrap-up. That's why we were waiting a couple of weeks, because he had some news. He wanted to break it with us. It didn't happen. A day or two after the show aired, we found out that our Road to Indy insider, Rob Howden, will now be... Oh, what's the official title? Rob Howden will be... He'll be the Series Development Director, a multifaceted role with the primary focus as a liaison with teams and drivers, in addition to assisting with the recruitment of prospective competitors and as an advisor on key areas of continued growth for the Road to Indy. He replaced Johnny Baker, who after 3 years departs due to the time demands of the highly successful Coforce Consulting, Marketing, and Digital Agency, founded a partnership with some guy who's a Viking. I don't know who he is. He never calls and texts me anymore, so it's like I'm not even around. Oh, Anders Krohn.
Well, he's a big shot marketing executive now, so.
Yes. No, but all seriousness, I'm excited for Rob, and this is going to also increase our involvement in the Road to Indy. So you're going to see a lot more drivers on the road to the Road to Indy ladder here on Inside Open Wheel. This is just, it's fantastic news. And when he told me initially, I'm like, dude, there's nobody better for that job than you. I am super happy for Rob.
Yeah, Yeah, I'll be excited to see what it can do. Johnny, I raced with in Pro Mazda way back in the day, and he was actually, before he had this position that he just left, he was the manager for Pelfrey. And so I negotiated my my car rental contract with him, that the car that's now with Turn 3. And so I'm going to have to get in touch with Rob at some point to just sort of introduce myself and say, my car is happily with Turn 3 right now, but in the future, he might have to help me find another team.
Oh, come on. You mean the Peter's not going to want to keep your car around?
I hope he does. I mean, he does for the next year, so hopefully it goes on longer than that. But, just got to cover your bases.
And we do have some news on Turn 3 as well. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. While we're on the road to Indy, theme, they did announce that Tire Rack's returning as the headline for the new Road to Indy e-racing series. The e-series will virtually take competitors on a mix of road, street, and oval circuits, which include Road America, Raceway, Belle Isle Park, Iowa Speedway, WeatherTech Raceway, Laguna Seca, and the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, as well as Worldwide Technology Raceway. Rob did say he had a list of drivers he was going to get to me. We'll have those drivers who will be participating next week on Inside Open Wheel, but he did say it's a big list. It sounds like it's going to be bigger than it was last year.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if any rivalries develop out of this before the season even starts.
Oh, kind of like we almost had rivalries in the IndyCar series because of some of the stupidity in the E-series?
Yeah, I'm not sure if the drivers are going to be that crazy. Hopefully they've learned from it, but you never know. I mean, a lot of these drivers are pretty young, so who knows?
Well, also, remember how close we were to having Simon Pagenaud as a villain. God,
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, this is like, it happened in NASCAR, too, where these drivers kind of like they think that it's a video game and they don't really take it seriously at a certain point.
Well, some drivers decided to drop. Never mind. We won't go down that road. By the way, we have our own CE series that we are going to be the official podcast of. You'll want to stay tuned for that news here in just a little bit. But first, coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, remember how we talked about a lot of driver announcements that happened in the holiday break? Yeah, egg on face. More on those here next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
We've had a lot of driver announcements over the holiday period, more than I thought we would have. So to do that, we're going to break this down. Charlie Ante joins me as well. I made a handy-dandy Driver Info 2021 season spreadsheet because I'm a dork like that. And a lot of these driver announcements happened in USF 2000 over the past couple of days. Oh, I forgot to ask DE Force if they've got any more of those driver announcements because they were really throwing them out in the past week. Holy cow. So, Charlie, if you look at the bottom, let's go ahead and start off with... let's start with F4.
Hold on.
Yep.
Wait. I'm not sure I have this page.
I sent it to you in the chat. No. It is in the driver announcements in our rundown. So click on driver announcements.
Oh. Okay, hold on. Let me go back to that.
To add to the professionalism To add to the professionalism of Inside Open Wheel, I've now sent Charlie roster sheets, and you'll find out more why later, and so will Charlie. Okay, so what I did, Charlie, is I put them in lime green, the announcements between the two shows. All right, so here in F4. Jensen Global Advisors announced that Oscar Hafar will be running with them to pair with Jake Bonilla. Velocity Racing Development announced that Nick Persing will return to F4. Just today before filming, Jay Howard Driver Development. Yes, Jay Howard Driver Development is coming back to F4, at least with Matthew Christensen. I would not be surprised if we see more cars be announced here in the next couple of days. Now over to USF 2000, Millennium Motorsports announced that they will have a two-car effort this year. Their drivers have yet to be announced. DE Force Racing announced that Kiko Porto, Nolan Siegel, Ellie Navarro, and Prescott Campbell, the former two drivers, the two most recent champions of the Lucas Oil Racing School Series, they will be running for DE Force Racing. Thomas Nipvo will be running for Cape Motorsports, the Canadian making his debut with that team. Josh Pearson running with Pabst Racing, and Josh Green over at Turn 3 Motorsport. Yes, Turn 3 Motorsport is going to be running in USF 2000. Remember, we hinted at that last year because we did see that they did have a couple of cars that they were testing at one of the Academy races. In Indy Lights, Robert McGinnis rounds out the Andretti Autosport field. That's going to be a stacked team with Robert McGinnis, Kyle Kirkwood, Daniel Frost, and Devlin DeFrancesco. If you remember, DeFrancesco was supposed to run lights last year, ended up in Indy Pro 2000. David Maluka is confirmed at HMD Motorsports, and Alex Peroni. I think, Charlie, did we talk about Peroni off the air or on the air? I can't remember.
I don't remember either. Okay.
He's the Australian who, if you remember, set up a GoFundMe to try and have living expenses in the States.
Yes, I think we talked about this off the air.
Okay, so yeah. And you had some strong opinions about that.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, if he's, I mean, well, it's two. So I'm under the assumption that all of these drivers are paying for their racing. And it feels like if you can afford $700,000 Indy Lights program, then what, like, you can probably afford to get a crappy apartment and pay rent and pay food, you know. Or if you can't, then, you know, maybe you could get a job. Just an idea.
You can email your gripes to Charlie at InsideOpenWheel.com. By the way, we're still actually going to hopefully get a website this year. It all depends on funding. Another interesting...
I would say that I have some sympathy that it's probably difficult for a young Australian to come to the U.S. and find a job as an immigrant. So that's what that is. But, you know, asking for money like that is not a good look.
Also in that news of Alex Peroni, Jay Howard Driving Development will partner with Carlin. So Jay Howard trying to fully complete the ladder to IndyCar racing. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jay partner with like Ganassi or Schmidt or one of the teams that he's raced with in the next couple of years. You know, maybe start an Indy 500 program or, you know, run a partial season.
Yeah.
Also in the world of IndyCar, Dale Coyne announced that sometime this month he would announce who would replace TBA in the 18 and the 19 cars. Also, Connor Daly has been announced as the road course driver car in the 20, and he'll be back in the 47 for the Indianapolis 500. No word yet on if he'll be contesting the oval races with Carlin Racing, and it sounds like also that Juncos Racing may have a car, possibly part-time, during the 2021 championship. So most of the IndyCar field has been set. We haven't heard from F1600 Pro Formula Atlantic or Eastern Pro 4. We have reached out to that series, and basically it was, you know, I haven't gotten any press releases, so I've got nothing to say. That's what the series has said. Does Andy Speed have any announcement on their drivers this year?
Our announcement is, we don't know. Hopefully, you know, whenever the pandemic goes over. I think, you know, my dad's at a higher risk, category, and, we've kind of decided that, you know, even, you know, whether or not we're in higher risk or lower risk, all of the travel restrictions and the restrictions on, you know, businesses and restaurants and stuff, like when you go to these tracks, where are you going to go to eat? So it kind of takes the fun out of it, and that's what we're in this for at this point. So,
well, you go to the grocery store, you bring a grill with you, and you grill something. That's where the fun of it is.
I don't know.
Never mind.
I like going to my crappy chain restaurants.
This is why we need to travel together when it comes to races.
So I gotta spend all day working on the car, and then I gotta cook.
Well, no, that's why you have one of your crew members cook. That's why
I am my crew member.
That's why you bring a lackey with you. That's why you bring a lackey in from England and tell him and his girlfriend that, hey, you're going to help me out and you're going to grill at the end of the day. Hi, Austin, if you're listening.
That sounds suspiciously specific. And also, I may get flamed for this, but I wouldn't trust an English person to cook.
Oh, Again, your complaints, Charlie at InsideOpenWheel.com. Oh, well, you would know. You would know. You spent some time over there.
I did. And there's a lot of great things about England. The food is not at the top of the list.
So what else do we have? Oh, we're going to be brief.
I'm going to get in trouble for this episode.
Now, you know what? I've probably gotten in trouble for multiple episodes. That's probably why. No, I'm surprised a sim racing series decided that they wanted to have me as their official podcast host and you as their official driver analyst.
Well, they made that decision before we recorded this episode. So,
but they listened to the other episodes. I haven't changed over the years. They're lucky I haven't brought back Wanker of the Week. I'm actually thinking about that still, too. Remember that?
I think you should. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that was so fun. So tweet us at Inside Open Wheel if you think we should bring back Wanker of the Week. I'm sure none of you heard. I used to do a podcast about 10 years ago and a live radio show, and I always had Wanker of the Week, and it was always the driver who did the stupidest move, but I've been afraid to bring it back because I don't want to piss off a driver or a series, but if you think I should, again, tweet us at Inside Open Wheel. Let us know. Please, I want you guys to be interactive with the show. That's what the whole Twitter's all about. So, yeah, just let us know what we can do. Let us know any questions, comments, concerns you have on Twitter, Facebook, whatnot. You know, this is going to be a whole community. We've got a lot of other things coming through the pipeline in the next couple of months. So what you hear is just the beginning. Next couple months are going to be pretty interesting. I will say that much. All right, coming up next on Inside Open Wheel. Over the past couple of days, we heard rumblings about a problem with Pro Formula Atlantics. So I decided to go to the source. I have two drivers who are running the two car chassis that are the question next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Charlie Ante joins us in just a little bit to discuss our big news of the week. Right now, as you know, we were following some of Formula Race Promotions action over the past season. Last year, we focused heavily on the F1600 Championship, but this year, we're going to be doing some more. And that's going to be in the world of Formula Atlantic. I had a chance to talk to Merle Swan. We'll dive into that conversation with Merle here in just a little bit. But right now, I do want to bring in a local Midwest driver who I've known for quite some time. And it's great to see him back in the ranks of Atlantics. It is Matt Miller. Matt, great for you to take some time out of your day to join us. Thank you very much. And last time I saw you, it was in a Swift 016, which that's... For some, we'll say it's a point of contention, but I'll tell you why it's not a point of contention here in just a little bit. You're actually going to be running a Swift 014, which is a generation before the 16s.
That is correct. That is correct. And thanks for having me on the show, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
So let's talk about why you decided to go from the 16s to the 14s, because this all starts back several years ago in SCCA Club Racing, where... the 016s, they were pretty dominant, but they were starting to be paired back to, as some would say, be more competitive with the Swift 014s.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. The reason, you know, I drove an 016, owned one for, gosh, what was it, 5 years. And then I leased one for 1 year. So I was in a 016 for 6 years in total. And, you know, that was all my Atlantic experience was in the 016. And the reason for the switch is, you know, I wanted to try driving a lightweight true Atlantic car, you know, which I'd never been in. You know, the 016 was, you know, more of an Atlantic car in name only. The dimensions didn't fit the rule book. Great car, a lot of fun to drive, but I wanted to try driving something a little more lightweight and nimble.
And of course, this leads you to the Atlantic Championship. You've run Atlantics in the Midwest, but now you're going on to more of a national stage. Is this going to be a part-time effort, or are we going full-time for next season?
Oh, strictly part-time. Strictly part-time. You know, yeah, just a select race for myself this year.
So Let's get into the 2016-04 team. We talked to Merle Swan, and the rumors over the past couple of days were that the 2016s were going to run unrestricted. So basically, in essence, the same format as what they're going to be running, what they ran in the previous Atlantic Championship, which was under Champ Car and IMSA jurisdiction. That's because a lot of people are upset of the way SEC has handled the balance of performance, to take a page from our sports car brethren, of the 2016s, kind of make it more competitive and bring it back to the 2014s. Some people weren't happy, so they said, hey, let's go over to the Atlantic Championship and run the 16s as they were meant to be. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, in these times, particularly during a global pandemic, I think, you know, whatever a series can do to bring guys and take their race cars out of the garage and come out and race, I think is a good thing. You know, to get people racing is always the goal. And, I think it's a good thing. I think really the reality is you're kind of creating two different classes of cars, by doing that. It's just that an 2016 unrestricted is going to be a very fun, fast car to drive, but, it's a lot different car than a traditional Atlantic car.
But it also sounds like that you are going to have some competition. You won't have to worry about battling with the 16s. You can run with 14s or other class cars. Well, like say a Ralt comes, you guys can stay competitive and have your own race and not have to worry about, oh geez, I'm not going to make the overall podium because, I've got a 16 that, a field of 16s, 2-3 seconds ahead of me.
I think they did a good job on creating, two different races where guys can compete for two separate podiums. So yeah, that's a good, the way they made that, two different championships, I think helps the situation.
Matt Miller joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. He is a Midwestern Formula Atlantic competitor. And I've got to say this, it is a really neat, cause I'll be fully honest. And, the first time I heard it from some people, I'm like, well, that's kind of not fair, because if you can run a certain amount of races and it'll still qualify you for the runoffs, I'm thinking, wait, if you run unrestricted for the Atlantics, what the heck? Then you got to go back. But it turns out that, these guys aren't going to run the runoffs. We'll find out more later from Merle Swan. So it does create a race within a race. It creates better competition because you're only worrying about, cars that are like-minded, not cars that were made to get drivers up to the next step in professional racing.
That is true. That is true. It's, basically we're running vintage race cars, and we're trying to accommodate guys that own vintage race cars and give them championships to run for.
So in essence, this is going to be a great thing for you. It's going to be a great thing for the Swift 2016s. What else do you have going on? Cause I know it's been a while since you and I sat down and talked, hearing that, there might be another generation of Millers coming up through the ranks too.
There could be, my son, Matthew is 13, mm-hmm. and, he's going to start his first year, karting, this year, 2021 and the Ignite series, of karts, put out by Margay, so it's a spec series, quite affordable. And I didn't think he was interested all those years, and all of a sudden, this last summer he started to get more interested. So we're gonna see how it goes.
That's fantastic.
So looking forward to it.
That's fantastic. I've got to say, Ignite and Margay, they have such a great starter series. I actually started doing some announcing at the kart track at Audubon Country Club, and it's just amazing that even in the club side, how supportive Margay is with their carters.
I agree. I think it's a great program. Margay's an old name in the industry, been around a long time, and it's good to see them have a real healthy series like this and having it locally supported by the Audubon Country Club, where people could race consistently at a local level and then step up to a national level too. I think it's just a great program. Spec car, spec tires, spec engine, low maintenance costs. It sounds like fun.
Well, Matt, I've got to say this. I'm excited for the Atlantic Championship this year. I think this is going to be the shot in the arm that it needed, because, you know, you take a look, and now you're going to have drivers who wouldn't have thought of driving in this. Now they're going to be competing in it, because if they have a 16, a Swift, a 14, or a Ralt, they're going to, it seems like they're going to have some sort of race where they're going to be competitive.
I agree. I think it's going to be a really good time. And I hope it turns out some drivers that normally wouldn't come out. And hopefully this will get it done.
Matt Miller, thanks for joining us. Let's go real quick also to the Merle Swan interview. Let's start off with the concept between the two Formula Atlantic system. To me, it sounds like it's going to be something like back in 2006 when the Swift 16s came into play. It was the Swift 16s, and then the C2 class was the Swift 14 and whatever else could run at the time.
Yeah, that was like the true Pro Series days, you know, because like the 016 didn't get introduced into the SCCA until 2010. But like, yeah, this is more like the true Pro days, because, you know, there's just a lot of people with 016s that are dissatisfied with the, like, this attempt to equalize. You know, you spend a lot of time and effort having one of the fastest, if not the outright fastest car in SCCA, and then it gets crippled to a point where it's no longer, you know, why spend the time and effort and money and finances and all that to drive a car that's being brought well below its abilities.
And one of the first times that I actually saw that this was a problem was the runoffs at Road America last year, where you had a 16 and a 14 go up against one another, and the 14 ended up at the front and winning. So how long has this been in the works to have this 16s run unrestricted in the Formula Atlantics with Formula Race Promotions and a C2 class?
I mean, I've supported the idea for a long time, just because if you remember a few years before this, the 016 was a major overdog, because it had a much larger restrictor and it was lighter weight. So it was just, it's just a fundamentally different car from like what you would call your typical FA, you know, prior to the 016. The Swift 016 was such a drastic departure from a typical Atlantic that it's different in every way, not just horsepower, but it produces a lot of downforce and it's faster in different areas. And so this year at Road America, while the lap times were very similar, they produce their lap times in different places, and so it makes them very difficult to race. And so now I have guys with those 16s that are very unsatisfied, and the Pro Series saw this and was willing to help us out. And I think this is a good way. This is, you know, good place for guys to keep running the 016, because the SCCA way was going to basically end my 016 drivers, you know, participating.
And how many of your drivers that run the 016 are going to be running in the Pro Series next year?
Well, I have six cars that will be running there. And, you know, I imagine we'll have a few more. Like, I don't know what the overall numbers will be. Like, I'm hoping, like, around 15. You know, it's formula car racing across the board in SCCA and in pro racing has been suffering in the last few years. So it's kind of sad to me that 15 seems like a very big number, but that would be a great number. And I think that there will be some races we're close to that, and then other races we're closer to 10.
As I say, actually take a look at Indy Lights and, you know, a 12 car field. Hey, that was great, you know, 2 years ago. And yeah, we're looking at the same thing. Yeah. 15 cars, and oh, this is fantastic. But
yeah,
do you think that maybe word of mouth might get around, and maybe by the middle of the season we might get close to 20 cars?
I'd like to think so, because, like, I mean, I think that this will be, I think it's going to be a great thing for the guys at the 016. They're all very excited about getting to run there. And then the 014 guys are the same way. They're not worried about trying to compete with an 016, you know, and so I think that the 014 participation will go up also.
So the 16-
I mean, I know that I'll have a couple more 014s than I did last year.
So the 16s, then, they're going to run the Mazda motor, no problems. What's that going to be compared to the 14s?
The 014 is, you know, if you look at the 014, it's like classic Atlantic. It's what a lot of people refer to as poor man's F1, you know, because you can do anything you want with an 014 as long as it meets the CC size of the engine and it's not turbocharged, you basically can do whatever you want. And so that's what, you know, Atlantic will still be. You know, with the 014, you'll be able to do as you've done in the past. And with the 016, you know, I hesitate to say it's like unrestricted because a lot of people may think that like that's like all, there's still restrictions with like 2.3 and like it has to be built within Atlantic specs. But like instead of having an SIR restricting the air intake, it will no longer have that SIR on it, which will, you know, give it its horsepower back.
And in layman's terms, for those who don't understand what an SIR is, what is it and what does it exactly do other than, you know, restrict, obviously?
Yeah, they've put an airbox on the intake system that has a 31-millimeter hole that the engine has to breathe through, you know, and an engine is just an air pump. And so, like, when you basically try to restrict it down to that small of a size, it obviously restricts its horsepower, restricts its RPM. It's, you know, restricts it quite a lot. So it's a single inlet restrictor.
And coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, the big announcement you've all been waiting for.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
So we've been teasing this the whole show. I'm really excited to announce this. Charlie Ante joins me, and obviously one of the announcements we didn't tease is Charlie's going to be joining us for more interview segments, and I know that scares the living piss out of him, but hey, you know, if I've got to have a co-host, I've got to have a second person who actually knows a thing or two about the cars.
And I guess that means that I'm going to have to do some prep before these shows.
I know, it's hard, because now I'm going to have to tear you away from all your model building, all your sim racing. Okay, so a little bit before our last show, Charlie came to me and said, what about, you know, working with a sim series? Okay, you know, that's a pretty good idea. Right after the final episode that we taped, Charlie sent a contact to the head of the series that we're covering this year. You may have seen it on Twitter, but if you haven't, I'll let you in on this. The press release. It reads, the Coca-Cola bottling company Kokomo Indy Elite Series announces a new partnership with up-and-coming podcast Inside Open Wheel. Inside Open Wheel will be the official podcast of the Indy Elite Series, as well as the title sponsor for the 2021 season opening at Homestead Miami Speedway. The race will be titled the Inside Open Wheel 225. Charlie, did you ever imagine you know somebody who is going to throw some money at a race so that way they can have their name splattered all over it, especially ours?
I didn't think it would happen this soon, but I'm not super surprised.
You know, I'm really excited about this. If you're listening to this, you probably already saw that we changed our logo as well. And that was part of the reason why we went in and did this race. But in my opinion, I think this is a great move on several parts. One of those is because obviously Charlie's running. So we finally have a true driver analyst. I can call him a driver analyst and he's actually a driver analyst. But in all seriousness, this will be a great cross promotion between us and the Indy Elite Series. And you're going to be running a very historic paint scheme in this championship this year.
I believe the series uses Trading Paints, which is a third party app that pretty much everybody in iRacing uses to paint their cars. And I like to run the hot one, the Shearson Racing Domino's car. It's my favorite all-time IndyCar livery, so I try to rock it whenever I can.
It's one of the best liveries out there when it comes to, you know, the 80s. One of the more iconic ones. So, as you know, when we cover a series, we like to get somebody from the series who is, well, an analyst or, you know, follows a series every week because, as you know, it's kind of hard for me to sit there and watch every series, but now in the winter I'll be able to participate a little bit more. So joining us from SimTV, the official broadcaster for the Indy Elite Series, is Kyle Heyer of Sim.TV. And Kyle, you're also, I believe you said you're also a local guy, so you're not too far from me, so I've got to watch out for my other jobs too in announcing around the Midwest?
Yeah, well, I just moved to Chicago a couple months ago after being born and raised in Rochester, New York. So this is a really exciting time for me to kind of move out here. My roommate is a professional race car driver, Tom O'Gorman. So if you'd asked me 2 years ago if I'd be living here doing what I do, I'd have said you're crazy, but here we are. So it's been a pretty wild ride the last couple of years with SimTV, a sim racing broadcasting company that I started in my dorm room with my roommate in college. And it sort of spiraled out of control into some real world opportunities as well. And eventually landed a job at GridLife, which is where I work now full time. But I keep doing SimTV as a side project, and it's gone a little bit out of hand, but it's still super, super fun as a hobby and a project.
Well, I'll say this. Those of us who have been announcers do back into their jobs. So I understand what you're saying, by the way. But in all seriousness, welcome inside Open World. We're glad to have you as an analyst. Let's talk a little bit more about you. You already said that, you know, you work for GridLife. You're here in Chicago, which that is where GridLife is based. So, but for our listeners who don't know what GridLife is, first of all, what is it?
Well, GridLife is basically a traveling music and motorsports festival. So it essentially takes everything that the track day community enjoys and adds sort of a festival aspect to it, like music and food trucks and that sort of thing. And it travels around the country, mostly around the Midwest, and puts on festivals and track day events to kind of bring those communities together and maybe appeal to people that aren't necessarily car people or auto-driven people. And I didn't know about GridLife's existence until probably middle of to late 2018. I met the GridLife group through iRacing because they have a super big community there, and ended up going to GridLife Midwest, which is an event that's held annually at Gingerman Raceway in Michigan.
Oh, Gingerman.
And just had the greatest time ever. I mean, it was my first time going to an event where I really felt like there was more going on than just cars on a racetrack. And that to me was the coolest thing ever. So they go to Road Atlanta, or they have gone to Road Atlanta, Gingerman Raceway, Road America, a lot of the really premier Midwestern tracks. And it's just an absolute blast.
I love Gingerman. One of my favorite tracks in the Midwest. It's not the Audubon Country Club where I'm the track announcer, but okay. So you work with GridLife. You also do the sim racing TV on SimTV. Let's talk about the Indy Elite Series. How long have you been announcing these races for them?
So we actually started with them last year. So that would have been 2019. We began broadcasting that group on Sunday nights. It was myself and Finian DeCuna, who was the co-creator of SimTV a couple of years ago. And we had really been looking for some open wheel on our network for a little while, just because it's something different. We kind of started with stock cars and kind of tin top road racing leagues and got into that a little bit. But the open wheel side of iRacing is something that's pretty well fleshed out in terms of the ladder system. And we just really hadn't delved into it. So we wanted some sort of open wheel series. And Indy Elite came to us with a super interesting, basically open setup series, which is not a common thing floating around in the leagues. Open setup series take a lot more effort from the drivers and teams to really to be competitive. And to see that series with such a stout entry list with people I'd heard of in the sim racing community was really attractive to us. So we decided to give it a shot. And what it ended up being was one of the most, and probably to this day, the most entertaining series we've done, Cradle to Grave, on SimTV, just because of how intense the racing is and how real it feels. And a lot of sim racing looks like sim racing. You can tell it's sim racers. But with Indy Elite, the races feel like a real IndyCar race. And the schedule is kind of similarly slated, with Oval and Road kind of taking an equal part of the calendar. So the realistic feel is what made it feel like I wasn't sitting in a dorm room shouted into a USB mic. It really felt like I was sitting at the racetrack, and that was a big difference for us.
So this year, there are several races along the schedule. We start this weekend at the Homestead Miami Speedway. And another surprise is you're letting a professional guy into the broadcast booth. I'm going to use that in quotes. So that's going to be kind of fun. I'm excited to be a part of the broadcast for just a little bit and to see how it's going to run. But more on this series, we're going to dive into the history of last year and how that went. We'll talk about, you know, the champion and go through the schedule. Charlie is going to, we're going to talk a little bit about prep for you, but what are your first initial thoughts of this series, Charlie? I know you ran it a little bit last year.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the thing that sort of solidified it in my mind as a suggestion to cover is because my experience of driving in the series last season, and the quality of the competition is incredibly impressive. I mean, I've been sim racing for a long time. I've been an iRacing member for 10 years. It's remarkable how mediocre I continue to be despite having been doing it for so long. And I think I looked at my stats for last year, and my best finish was 20th. So the drivers at the front and I mean at the front and all the way down, are incredible. The quality competition is absolutely stellar. And I think that it's, you know, from that perspective, I would say that it's up there with real world racing. I mean, in terms of how good these drivers are at what they do.
Kyle?
Yeah, I think in the Elite Series, as I mentioned earlier, the reason why I thought it was so interesting was because of how real it felt. And I'm just looking back at just the results, and you can see that there's the dominance from drivers like Adam Blocker and Zach Campbell, who I'm sure we'll see again. The competition that Charlie mentioned, the fact that there are dominant drivers is no surprise. We see dominant drivers in the real world as well. But I think that's part of it is when you have a fixed series, you end up, you know, when no one can change the setups, you end up with a lot of randomness. And randomness isn't always the best thing for sim racing. And I think the open setup nature of the Indy Elite Series allows it to really, drivers can get momentum built up and can find something in the setups that really make them competitive. And as I mentioned, the schedule, you know, we went to Circuit of the Americas and Indianapolis and Iowa and Michigan, all the Indy tracks that you would expect to see on a schedule. So I'm really excited for this upcoming season because we visit some tracks that we've gone to in the past, but we're also taking a different approach to this. And maybe Charlie can touch on this some more. Last year, we sort of ran a season in the first half of the year. This year, it's basically spanning the entirety of 2021, racing a little bit less often, but we have a longer schedule over the course of the year, which I think is going to create a more interesting and dynamic, probably, in the points situation, especially towards the end of the year.
Charlie?
Yeah, that was certainly one of the very sort of surprising changes, because I guess the way that I like to see sim racing as kind of a complement to my real world racing. So I've always been looking for an off season series that starts in maybe October or November and then goes through the winter. But obviously the people that create these series sort of have different ideas, I guess. But It starts this weekend, of course, and it goes all the way, I think, until October, is it?
Yep. October 19th is our finale.
Yep. So it'll be interesting. I'm not sure how it's going to change the competition. I guess the teams will have a bit more time to work on their setups between races. So that could be a significant dynamic.
And we've been talking a lot about setups. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, kind of want you to talk a little bit about the open setup and what that means compared to a fixed setup, which some series run next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
We're breaking down and previewing the Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Kokomo Indy Elite Series for 2021. Why? Because we are now the official podcast of that series. The Inside Open Wheel 225 kicks off this weekend on Sim.TV. And joining us is Kyle Heyer, the voice that you'll hear calling the race alongside Tom O'Gorman. Now, before we went into break, we talked a little bit about setups, how some series have an open setup, have a fixed setup. What is the difference, and why is the Indy Elite Series an open setup?
So the difference between fixed setup versus open setup is an argument as long as time in the iRacing service and the sim racing community in general. And essentially what it means to have a fixed setup is all of the cars have an identical setup for performance. Basically, everyone's spring rates are exactly the same. Everyone runs the exact same aerodynamics package. You can't tweak anything. And basically what it means is you can put 30 competitors on a racetrack, and the only difference between them in pace is going to be how fast they are and what line they're taking and that sort of thing. There's really nothing you can do from a mechanical standpoint to gain an advantage. It's all about your driving. Now, for some series, that's great. A lot of the NASCAR series that you'll see in iRacing sort of take that approach, because in NASCAR and in IndyCar for that matter, with the spec chassis that they've gone to, it's the idea is to kind of have spec racing but not have spec racing. So
it's kind of like the ultimate realization of the spec concept.
Exactly. Like even in NASCAR, the idea is that everyone has cars that are roughly the same speed, but that's not how it is in practice. So in a virtual environment, you have the opportunity to make all the cars equal. And so that's sort of the dream that everybody chases in the real world. And that's what we, you know, you can do in iRacing. But at that same point, there is a large engineering aspect to racing. And that is carried over into simulators like iRacing. So you can also have the option to have the setups open. And what that means is you can adjust the car, you can change the spring rates, you can add aero bits and pieces and tweak your car to drive how you want it to drive. Just like you would in the real world. And that opens up a lot of testing and engineering work that takes time to perfect. But I think it puts on a really good show when teams and drivers really put in the time and effort to make setups. And I know, Charlie, you've probably got a different perspective. I'm looking at it from kind of a top-down entertainment point of view. What's it like as a driver to have a fixed versus open? Do you prefer it one way or the other?
Well, I think something that a lot of people that are watching this with experience in real racing and sort of getting into sim racing for the first time might be surprised is that there's actually teams. And I think before I started with this, I was like, oh, well, why do you need a team to go sim racing? Just log on, sign in, and go. And one of the big things that I've realized is that the value of a team is that you have people in the team that specialize in setups. So you could have like a group of maybe 10 people on the team, and a few of them are really good drivers. Some of them, like me, are maybe not the best. And then some of them are maybe not the best drivers, but they know the car, they know the setup. They've been, you know, maybe driving this car for a couple of years. They know, if not all, maybe at least some of the techniques or the tricks that you have mentioned. And I think also it's sort of a level of commitment that it takes that increases the quality of competition, because with the fixed setup, you kind of just jump into a race. I know in the unofficial races that I run, or the official races on iRacing that I run, I can jump into a fixed NASCAR race and just go racing, you know, with maybe do a few laps of practice and then jump in a race. But if you're going to enter a spec or an open setup race, you really have to put the time in to get the setup, to understand the car, and to work on your line and all of those things.
And that just means that you've got to spend a little bit more time off a race weekend. You know, okay, you know what the schedule is ahead of time. Okay, so I got to spend, you know, like a day or two at this track and set up. You know, maybe I'll work with my teammates so we have a good setup for this next race.
Yeah, I think I remember like when we were all on lockdown last year, something like one of the IndyCar drivers said they did like 10,000 laps.
Yeah, that was Connor.
At one of the tracks. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Connor Daly.
So that's the kind of thing that you can do when you don't have to pay $10,000 a day for track rental.
Oh, God. Funny story. So Bree Rentz, who is the amazing PR rep over there at Carpenter Racing, she's like, oh, yeah, Connor's got this race in, this race then. I joked. I'm like, you know, oh, you know, it must be nice to be a driver so you can, you know, spend that time. She's like, well, he's practicing. I go, Bree, I know. You know, I know what these drivers are doing. It's not, you know, it's kind of interesting how, you know, even 5 years ago, Kyle, you know, sim racing was just seen as, oh, it's just a game, you know, but now we're starting to see drivers use these races to actually prep themselves for a race. And it doesn't matter if they're an IndyCar driver. We've seen stock car drivers. We've seen drag racers in these iRaces.
Yeah, I think this past year has been a really interesting foray into the legitimacy of sim racing as a whole. I know, you know, in terms of drivers picking which sim to use for their practice is pretty important and pretty personal to the driver. I know from watching IMSA's sports car thing that they did last season, that was relatively successful. I also happened to do the broadcasting and production for GT World Challenge America's GT Rivals Esports Championship as well. So there's a lot of real-world drivers over there. And it's been interesting to watch drivers sort of hear their opinions about different simulators and which ones they like for what reasons. But I found that most people that have given iRacing a try and have stuck with it for a while will tell you that iRacing, you find speed the most naturally in iRacing versus something like a set of course Competizione or R Factor 2. I know R Factor 2 has a better feel for a lot of people, but every sim has its pros and cons. And it's been a fascinating experience to watch these different scenarios play out. R Factor 2 ran a virtual Le Mans. IMSA had their iRacing series. GT World Challenge America did something with Assetto Corsa. It's been a fascinating story to watch these different sims sort of get taken out and ripped apart by these drivers that want to see it used for as a tool instead of just a game. And I think a lot of it comes down to your intention. And living with a pro race car driver that really embraces using simulators to practice and to test, but also use it as a game, it really comes down to, are you treating this as a game or are you treating this as a simulator? Because you can do both, even with the same game and title.
And now we're also seeing that some of these pro drivers, you know, one that I know well is Mark Miller. They're now taking this and, okay, well, I can coach you in sim racing if that's all you're going to do, which I think is also interesting here in the past couple of years.
Yeah, the coaching aspect is fascinating as well. I know another driver, Kenton Cook, who runs in GT4 America, uses iRacing as sort of a platform for data as well. And you can really dive deep into data acquisition and use the same tools that you would use on your real car in the real world. He drives the Aston Martin GT4. You can use those same tools to analyze your performance in the simulator and really sort of extract data that could help you on the real racetrack. And I think that's been an interesting story to watch as well, is watching not only drivers get the feel and the hang of it, but also utilizing it for numbers and information like that. BMW, for example, during the IMSA series that they ran in iRacing, they had their real engineers setting up their M8 GTE car. So the things mechanically and electronically translate pretty well back and forth, which is also pretty cool.
Well, I know I also,
I think it would be really interesting to talk to those engineers and get into like a sort of in-depth discussion on the differences between the setups, because I'm sure that if you took a real world setup sheet and just copied and pasted it into iRacing or whatever sim you want, it wouldn't feel the same. There would definitely be differences. But the process of working with the driver and testing and finding a setup that way is you are able to copy that process and paste it into sim racing. So I would be very interested to see or to listen to hear what they would have to say about it from that perspective.
I was going to say, also, I know we talked to Scott McLaughlin earlier last season. He said that he was working with his race engineer that he was going to have a Penske for what at the time was supposed to be the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, but ended up being the St. Petersburg Grand Prix, the season ender. So there is some benefit to doing that. And that was during the IndyCar sanctioned iRacing, obviously, when Scott McLaughlin had to get up at ODAR 30 to run that. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this whole open versus fixed setup. It's news to me because I don't really have a computer that's set for iRacing, and being somebody who, you know, is live on air for some just radio stations, I know it's kind of shocking, but I think it's going to make things very interesting in my opinion, because I get to see what really affects some of these cars.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big discussions last season that we had, and now we should clarify that there has been a pretty massive update to the Dallara IR18 within iRacing as of recently. So when we get to drive the cars this season, they're going to be way different and race way better, I think, this year versus last year. But one of the things we saw was the aerodynamics kind of play in a lot more than I would have thought at first. Every race we could basically zoom in on the front wing of each of these cars and take a look at the wickers that they were using on the front wing elements, and you could tell which teams were using what aero setup just by looking at the visuals of the front wing. So it brings in a level of dynamicism that's pretty neat. Another thing that we're going to get to experiment with this season is tire compounds and using the red versus black tire, which up until a couple weeks ago wasn't a thing in iRacing. And now for the road races this year in the Coca-Cola of Kokomo Elite Series, we'll get the chance to actually have red versus black tires and see how that strategy mixes up the racing as well.
Charlie, have you had a chance to run the reds or the blacks yet?
I have. I think they're going to have to make some changes to them because the one race, I think it was at Road America, after about three or four laps on the reds, they became undrivable. So I think they're going to have to do some tweaking over the next few weeks to try to make them last a bit longer, because right now, you know, I mean, doing a five laps in a stint and then pitting is just not really viable.
Have you not been watching IndyCar the past several years? That's what happens. They fall off after five laps. Come on.
Well, this has been part of a larger kind of rebuild of the IndyCar. I know that last year during the iRacing IndyCar series, there was a lot of very public criticism of how the IR18 drove in the simulator. And it wasn't necessarily the balance of the car so much. It was more just about the tire that it was on. And we've seen some pretty big changes. And the initial feedback I've heard, I haven't really had a chance to drive it all that much. But from what I've heard, it's a pretty big step in the right direction, at least with the normal tire. I think the Reds, as Charlie's mentioning, probably need some tweaks, but I will bet that they will probably get pointed in the right direction at some point. Because I think iRacing as a whole has made a lot of good steps lately. I expect that trend to continue. We'll just hopefully we'll get those fixed before Barber, which is only in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with these changes, because that's one thing I've noticed about iRacing is when they have issues like that, they're pretty receptive to change. So that's a good thing. All right, we're going to talk about this upcoming season. We're going to talk about a couple things. But coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we break down last season and talk about the opening Inside Open Wheel 225. We'll be live on Sim TV on Sunday. That's all up next.
The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, you'll want to stay tuned because you're going to love who we're going to have for our Legends of Open Wheel series of 2021. It is a hell of an opener. I'm excited about it, but I'm really excited for Sunday's Inside Open Wheel 225 live on Sim TV Sunday at 7:15 p.m. Eastern. Charlie Ante will be racing. He'll be in one of the iconic Domino's Pizza liveries, but one of the voices.
Well, I should caveat that with I will be racing if I qualify.
Dr. Jack Miller, no, I'm kidding, but maybe because we are the official podcast, we can get a little boost in your car.
I don't know. Well, I'm not sure if we've gone over the format.
We are actually going to go over the format.
Okay, can I do it now?
Not right now. I've got to bring in our guest.
All right.
He's the analyst for the Indy Elite series, and he is also the voice of Simnet TV. Kyle Heyer joining us. All right, Charlie, since you're so adamant about telling us the format of what we're going to see on Sunday, what's going on?
Well, I'm excited to talk about it because I think it's one of the cool things about the Elite series. There are 33 spots for each race, unless they have a celebrity driver, and then they extend it by however many they have. But I think there are 40 spots, like qualifying spots. So you gotta race your way into the show every race, and the bottom seven are they're already at home, but. But they can just sort of play something else for the evening.
They go further home.
Yeah, or in my case, I guess I go into my living room and turn on the race so I can watch it. So I think that's one of the things, and I feel like because I think I mentioned that my best finish last year was 20th out of 33, and there were plenty of races that I didn't qualify for. So we should. I just want to keep things in perspective.
So 45 entrants for the full-time season. There's a lot of part-time entrants too. Kyle, also a lot of different celebrities, as Charlie mentioned, do come. I did see, you know, Wyatt Gooden's in the list. Flynn Lazier, who is the son of Buddy Lazier, nephew of Jock Lazier, the grandson of Bob Lazier. I'm not trying to put the fear of God in you, Charlie, but I'm just letting you know what you're up against. He's in the.
You know, I mean, we talked about the quality competition earlier. They are sort of the least of my worries. The series regulars are no joke.
So, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Kyle.
I was just going to say the series regulars that he mentioned, I think you got to look at some of the teams that have been really successful in the past. I see Brennan Lichtenberg is back on the list again. He won a handful of races last season. The Kingsburys are there. Those two guys, the brothers, they're pretty hard to beat. They're super aggressive out there as well. I see that Riley Thompson is coming back. We see him in a couple different series that we broadcast on Sim TV. And I think if I'm looking down, do I see, Adam Blocker, Henry Bennett, that pairing for Power Slide Motorsports, that's been a pretty wild group. They've just been winning and basically got the top step on the podium almost every week, one of those two guys. So the series regulars are really the ones I'd be worried about. But you mentioned star power, having Flynn Lazier back. He was no slouch either with Last Lap Motorsports. I think he'll be pretty good. Philip Krause is also on that team. He was a rookie last year and was super impressive. So dropping lots of names that nobody really knows. But I promise you, if you watch this series for the entire year, you'll know who those drivers are. And you'll probably be impressed with them by the end of 2021.
Talk to us a little bit about last season, Kyle.
Well, last season, as I mentioned, for us, it was the first time we had done sort of an IndyCar series. And looking back, I think what we were most impressed about was the oval racing. The road racing wasn't bad by any stretch, but the oval racing, we had a full distance Indy 500 at the end of the season to kind of wrap things up. And we had Tony Kanaan in the field for that one. Didn't make it very far. There was a crash on the second or third lap of that race, but the racing across the board was really entertaining, but it did seem like drivers like Adam Blocker and Henry Bennett really got the ball rolling momentum wise. And just it was hard for drivers to beat them. We saw a lot of teams working together, especially at the bigger tracks like Michigan. So, Charlie, I'm sure you could probably speak to that as well. The bigger tracks ended up being pretty competitive.
Well, I guess I wouldn't really know because I'm always in the back.
That's much like his.
I can see everybody at all times, but from the looking down from the broadcaster virtual studio, but I don't know, from my perspective, that the big tracks especially were probably the most entertaining. The short tracks, they weren't not entertaining, but they felt very real. It was difficult to pass the aero wash, the aero push that you get from following another car. That was sort of evident as well. So I expect to see kind of more of the same in that regard. But I'm really excited for the road races, kind of previewing the upcoming season. We got Barber and Belle Isle is on there as well. Road America, Mid-Ohio, Laguna Seca, all really excited for throwing the tire compounds in there to make that interesting as well.
I have to admit, I was a little surprised that Long Beach isn't on the schedule this year.
I think this schedule was probably created before everyone knew that Long Beach was coming out. iRacing sort of just dropped that on everybody. Mm-hmm. I could have heard that there might have been rumblings to Charlie. You might know about this. Were they going to swap it for Belle Isle?
I don't know.
Maybe.
I say that because we had Long Beach on the schedule last year. So for those who don't know, it was what iRacing calls a tech track. So they had the racing surface modeled and textured and everything, but all the buildings and things around it weren't. So for this season in iRacing, they've introduced the full track. So now that they have it, properly in the sim, and since it's the biggest IndyCar race outside of the Indy 500, I am surprised that it wasn't on the schedule to begin with.
And it's such a beautiful track, and now that it's finally here in iRacing, I have not been able to stop driving it. It's so fun. Yeah. It's a place I'd love to visit in real life as well.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm in the minority, I feel like, sometimes, of people who actually really enjoy street circuits.
I would say that from my experience driving Belle Isle, I don't particularly enjoy Belle Isle all that much from a driver perspective in iRacing. Long Beach, though, you have to drag me out of there. It's so much fun. And even though they're both street tracks, I think they're super different in terms of how they drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see Long Beach on there. I can't speak to if it is a possibility that it'll change or not, but I wouldn't be upset if they were to make a swap.
Tell you what, as somebody who's a local guy, I like seeing Chicagoland Speedway back on any racing schedule. So the schedule looks like this. Obviously, Sunday we'll have the Homestead Miami Speedway for the Inside Open Wheel 225. Then January 17th, Phoenix. January 31st, Barber Motorsports Park. Texas Motor Speedway on the 21st, which is a single race, correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank goodness, because I...
Well, some of this might be news to me. I got a lot going on, so
don't
you might tell me something I don't know.
Don't tell me anything, and don't tell anybody in IndyCar racing. But I still think doubleheaders at Texas shouldn't be doing that. Anyway, so the series rolls off to Pocono Raceway on February 28th, March 14th. Raceway at Belle Isle, which, by the way, if you've Charlie, have you been to Belle Isle in real life?
I went once. I think it must have been like 2008. So it was a long time ago.
I was going to say, beautiful facility, but it is a pain in the butt to get to.
Yeah, I think I took a taxi to the place in the downtown where you take the bus over. Yeah, I think my biggest criticism was that walking around, you could only see like half the track.
Yeah, well, that's a street course for you. I actually, off the air, I've got a story. Statue of Limitations, I think, is off on that one. March 14th, we said Belle Isle. March 21st, Chicagoland Speedway. Then March 28th, Richmond Raceway. God, I wish I'd get back there in real life. The 6th annual Indianapolis 500 is April 25th. Then the break for the month of May, June 15th at Road America. June 27th at the Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course. August 1st, Worldwide Technology Raceway at Gateway. Then it's Kansas Speedway at August 31st. That track will always hold a special place in my heart. Charlie, you know why, correct?
No.
That's the greatest roval race I ever commentated on. September 26th, WeatherTech Raceway, Laguna Seca. Iowa Speedway, October 3rd. And we roll out the season at Auto Club Speedway on October 19th. Nothing like ending the season on an oval. And Kyle, you and Tom will be doing the full, I'm trying to do my math here, 16 race season together, correct?
Yeah, unless there's some sort of force in the universe. That'll likely be the plan. Obviously, with him being a pro driver, I'm sure there'll be an opportunity for him to do something at some point. So I'm keeping the option open for him to bail if he has to. But that's the initial plan for now, is to do the entire season.
I know, Charlie, you're going to attempt to do the entire season.
I will, unless I might have some lifestyle changes at some point.
Charlie, we don't need to we don't need to know about those.
Every race that I'm available for, I'll definitely be jumping in and trying to qualify for.
Well, I think at least the 26th, that's when we'll probably be at Audubon for FRP, correct? That sounds right.
Could be. It very well could be. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that one I know will probably miss. Well, I know you'll miss it. Well, you've got a couple FRP races at conflict, but yeah, I mean, really it's a solid schedule. We'll have all the races here. Race recaps, race previews on Inside Open Wheel. Hopefully, Kyle, you have no problem coming on, because obviously I like having these, you know, play-by-play guys on who are there. They see everything, so it's nice to have their perspective.
Absolutely. I'm around. I got stuff going on, but I'll always be around to pop in anytime. But I don't know. This season, I'm really excited. The other thing that we didn't mention yet about some of the changes that this car has seen in the digital world, new damage model. So that means that now the cars can have parts and pieces fly off, and they won't pogo into the distance every time they touch something. So they'll crash a lot more realistically. And in the sim, crashing is a little bit less of a big deal than it is in the real world. But it was a big problem in the past, because you'd get one crash and then it would just spiral into 10 people crashing because they'd kind of ping pong off the walls. So I think from a realism standpoint, not only the way the car drives, but the way it crashes is going to be a big change this year.
Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just that the crashes will look better, but like Kyle said, they're more realistic, but also they don't spiral out of control like they do sometimes, or they did with the old damage model.
Yeah, and also one thing we also failed to mention, we will have some of the drivers on every once in a while right after, you know, after they win, we'll talk to them. But this is going to be a great partnership. I know that everybody at the Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Kokomo Indy Elite Series, still not the longest name I've called. Remember, there's always the Bridgestone Presents the Champ Car World Series presented, powered by Ford. Remember, there's always that.
Oh man, don't remind me.
I miss those days, by the way. I just miss the cars.
Miss the cars, yeah.
Yeah, I miss the cars. That's about it. But nonetheless, Kyle, thanks for joining us. I'm really excited. Hopefully once everything opens up in the city, I'll have to come up join you guys for an adult beverage or two, and we can kind of shoot the breeze.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, we're around. We're, you know, again, I'm new to Chicago, and I'm just sad I haven't gotten to really enjoy it yet with all the crazy situation going on. Hopefully soon that'll kind of go away and we can start kind of exploring this new city. This is a really cool time for me.
I will warn you, the GPS does not work on Lower Wacker. So if you get lost on Lower Wacker, you're left to the ether.
Well, good to know. Thank you.
All right. So, Charlie, you know what next week is. You know who's going to be on next week. I'm still going to tell you. We're re-kicking off the Legends of Open Wheel series, and I am so excited. We are sitting down with the legend, the one, the only Mr. Paul Page.
My most recent memory of Paul Page, I don't know if it's my most recent, but my most one that I will never forget is when I went to the July 4th hot dog eating contest on Coney Island. And lo and behold, there he was commentating on the hot dog eating contest.
We do talk about the hot dog eating contest, but another thing that we talk about is this year's Indianapolis 500. We'll tell you more about you. You'll have to listen to it because it's an interesting story. Also, we talk about, obviously, some moments with he and Uncle Bobby. So if this is your first time listening to us, we thank you for joining us this season. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Wherever you're listening to us, make sure you hit that follow button so that way you can get notified of when new episodes come out of Inside Open Wheel. Also, next week, we will talk about the Academy Winter Series. So for Charlie Ante, Merle Swan, Matt Miller, Kyle Heyer, and myself, I'm Jeremy Scott. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Inside Open Wheel.